I'm Bonnie. Welcome to our podcast, where along with my hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, we explore the joys and challenges of homeschooling and of family life. An awareness of beauty and an appreciation for art in all its forms has been an important aspect of our home education. As you know, the last few episodes, we've talked a lot about beauty and art. Years ago, I discovered Catholic Heritage curricula and was first introduced to their art appreciation resources for young kids. They have an art masterpieces series. A desire for a deeper understanding of art led us to CHC's program, Ever Ancient, Ever New. This program is in two parts. Part one of Ever Ancient, Ever New guides us from ancient art forms to the art of the Renaissance. Part two leads us from the art of the High Renaissance through to the modern era. What really drew us to this program was the art appreciation aspect of it and the history aspect of it with a distinctly Catholic perspective. But the program also presents art theory and opportunity for practice with a companion art pad that comes along with it. They give the children projects that they can work on to practice some of the art skills inherent in the program. CHC materials are always steeped in beauty, and this program is visually delightful. For us, it helped us cultivate a sensitivity for beauty and gave us a solid foundation in the eras of art and the characteristics that define them. The lives of artists and cultural influences that affected art are explored in the context of each chapter. One of the really awesome parts of Ever Ancient, Ever New is that it can be used independently from children about grade five and up, or it can be read together as a family. As something we've really valued in our family, this program makes art appreciation something that parents can share with their children without being overwhelmed by the idea of introducing art. Beautiful, it's simple, it's engaging. I will put a link to the program in the show notes. Have a look, and you can also enjoy all of CHC's art programs that they offer for younger kids as well. I am grateful for CHC's support of this podcast. Thank you.
Good morning, all my listeners. Today I'm going to be running an interview with one of my dedicated listeners. Welcome, Bianca. I'm so glad you came.
Thank you, Bonnie. I'm so excited to be here.
So Bianca and I have had this ongoing conversation for, well, probably a year or more. You know, we've never met in person, but this ongoing conversation, I feel like I know you really well.
Yes.
You know, because just questions and conversation and all of this via Instagram chat. Bianca Salas is 33. She was born and raised in Santa Maria, California by Hispanic parents. And you identify yourself as a cradle Catholic, your mother being the main source of your sacraments and tradition, and but also some fear of God. That was sort of something that you did, you knew you had to do, was the impression I got from sort of what you had sent me. And so after that, your church experience wasn't huge. And then you had a reversion, conversion. Do you want to tell us first a little bit about your family and then a little bit about your reversion?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thank you for letting me, you know, giving me the opportunity to do this. It's so fun and
exciting.
I was born in California, and my parents, they come from Guanajuato, Mexico. And, you know, they moved over here for financial reasons, really, because they just lived very poorly in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And then my mother and father had an older my older sister, myself, and then a younger brother, but that was 12 years later. Growing up, it was just more of a tradition, you know, that we did our sacraments and that kind of thing, but there wasn't much catechesis going on. Flash forward to my high school years, my parents tell me we're moving to Missouri out of all places.
Missouri.
And I thought, what are we doing over there? But in California, it was just so financially difficult at the time to keep living there. So we moved, and, you know, I just thought, I was a teenager at the time. I was just right out of high school. So I thought, this is just miserable. This is not fun.
I hate this, yeah.
And so then shortly after that, I meet my husband, my current husband now, and he would go to church. And I thought, well, that's different. I've never met a boy that actually enjoys going to church. So that just kind of drew me into him and meeting him and all of that. And we dated for 3 years or so. We got married, And so we just got married, and I'm getting kind of distracted.
That's okay.
We get married, and then we go through some struggles 2 years later. And then I finally start thinking about, you know, questioning my life and God and all of that. And
it was some fertility issues.
Yes. So I went through two miscarriages, and that was the first time that I really thought, well, you know, I believed in God, but I didn't know, you know, again, it was more of a fear of God, like he's going to punish you, that was kind of my upbringing with the fertility issues. We finally became pregnant with our firstborn, and that was kind of the first time that I thought, well, you know, God is being good. He's good. He's being good to me. So I thought, there's no way I can't say at least thank you. I didn't know much about anything going to Mass. You know, even believed in the Eucharist to that point. You know, I didn't even know that was the true, real presence of God in our lives, in our faith.
I just have to stop you there for a second, because something you just said was so beautiful that I just had to stop God and thank him. You know, often our first encounter with God is actually begging him for something, right? And for your first encounter with him to be saying, to be gratitude, like that's really beautiful. That says a lot about you, I think.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
so that you know, was just let's just take a moment here and have gratitude, you know. I love it.
Yeah, okay. Thought, you know, I can't be not thankful for this, you know. And I thought, well, that was the first inclination I had to continue to go to Mass at least. And then 2 years later, we had another little girl named Ellie. She's our 6-year-old now. And we got invited to a retreat called A Walk to Emmaus through our church. And it was life-changing. You know, it was just a spiritual encounter with Jesus Christ also. And it was just a much deeper start to our reversion, really, for both my husband and myself. And now, you know, after learning a little bit more about the faith and trying to live it, we are now expecting our fifth child.
Oh, that is amazing. So beautiful. And this baby is due when?
February 27th, Lord willing.
Isn't that something? Oh, that's my daughter's birthday. That's amazing, you know, because I think especially often when you start off with fertility, you can't really wrap your head around having a big family, right?
Right.
With having fertility issues. And so, you know, what an amazing place to be right now. That's what I've found about you. So I wanted to have you on was because just your willingness to be open to new ideas or truths that you see. I think you and your husband must really be truth seekers. That's kind of what the impression I've got.
And you know, it wasn't like that. Like in one of your, or maybe in a few of your episodes, you mentioned that initially you were maybe shallow, or you know, your thoughts were a little bit
more
shallow.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And that's how
I'm still pretty shallow, actually.
I identified with that a lot because I never really put much thought into things. And then, you know, as faith started growing, my questions started getting deeper and deeper. And then, you know, God put you in my life. And I thought, oh, boy, like, there's a lot more.
A shallow mentor. Perfect. But it's a funny thing, eh? Because sometimes somebody just resonates with us, you know, because we can see that, you know, they were in a place and now they're in this place. I know I've had people say to me, because I was married before and, you know, went through a bad, very bad situation, I've had people come up to me after I've given a talk at a conference or something like that and say, you know, well, you were married before and you look pretty normal. And I think that's, you know, somehow my coming out of that and being okay on the other end helps people to know, okay, I can do this, right? I can do this. And doesn't mean my life is a fail because, you know, and for a long time I had years where I thought, okay, those were the wasted years. Those were the failed years. Those were the, you know, it was 9 years of my life. It was just trash. And I had to get past that, right? To really embrace my faith, I had to get past thinking that my a portion of my life was a fail, right?
And it's just, again, I agree with, and I feel the same way. When I went through the miscarriages, it was almost like I couldn't tell anyone, you know, I didn't want to share it with anyone because that's a failure, you know, and
it's like, your son is growling.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's growling. You know, with that retreat that we were able to live, it's more of a healing spiritual retreat, and so it continues in our parish. It continues, and we have a group. Thank God, we have a group of. It's all just the women, and then the men separately. But okay. You know, mostly husbands or spouses, you know, do it together, but not. I guess at the same time is what I mean, but not right. together. So women get right. to be with all women and that type of thing. And so we were able to open our hearts and share our stories. And I think that was a big, big part of it too, that we have someone to share our struggles with, you know, and grow from there.
Yeah. Yeah. So pragmatic sort of homeschooling kind of question. Do you speak both Spanish and English in your home?
I do. Again, going back to my story with our first two, I was working at the time, so they were both in daycare, unfortunately. And again, just the growing and learning, you know, from our mistakes yeah. or our past. I thought that was kind of the lifestyle we were going to have, was just my kids going to daycare and I'd be working and that type of thing. And so they initially learned English. So they were there up until my son was 3 when I stopped working, and my daughter was about a year and a half at the time. So they did learn more English, but, you know, we still work on the Spanish as well. So they're not very fluent in it, but we do try to.
yeah, that's awesome. My husband is French Canadian, so it is one of the regrets we have is that he didn't speak French to them when they were growing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, so our kids know, you know, they have some French, they have a little bit. Most of them took some French, you know, Duolingo or whatever over the years. But yeah, it's really nice to keep that alive. And I think it's really good for kids' brains, you know,
right.
just to have two languages is amazing. So you had some questions.
Yeah, so speaking about our faith, I just wondered, what was your experience and how did you, you know, how were you able to share and continue your faith and continue your children's faith after, you know, they got much older in the teen years? I know my kids are super little, but right now it seems easy for me to think I can impose it on them, I guess, sometimes. You know, they have to go to mass, they have to
pray. Yeah, that's a great question.
That type of thing. So what was your experience?
That's a great question. So I think that families that I know where the family is primarily, you know, their Catholic faith is intact. Now, you know, the qualifier is that no family is perfect. You know, our kids will always go through phases that, you know, we are not wild about, you know, where they're at, or they will question things. And if we don't have a faith that we can question, it can't be much of a faith, if you know what I mean, right? If your religion isn't questionable, then we definitely need to wonder why can't I ask the hard questions, right? Our faith should be able to stand up to that. And so most of them will. And I think that what I've seen is the families who really create kind of a family culture are the families where faith is maintained most effectively. We have, you know, we worked hard at sort of creating a family culture. Now I think it's sometimes harder when you're sort of for me, I was a convert, for Albert, you know, a revert. And to have... creating family culture was something we had to do very intentionally. Well, a lot of that came from our sort of, it was all Catholic traditions, but it was, many of them were French Canadian because Albert's family is French Canadian. And so we were really drawing on that, even though he didn't really know what those things meant and what they were. We drew a lot on that because I felt it was an important tradition to kind of keep alive, right? But the other thing was in terms of just family culture, like how do we do things? How do we pray together? How do we, you know, so we never forced our kids, you know, like you don't have to come to prayer. You don't have to. It was an expectation. Our expectations were very high. But we would say somebody, you know, had a hissy fit about something or whatever and stormed away. We're not going to say,
you get back here and pray with us. We never wanted it to be like that. Creating a family culture, I think, is probably the most important thing you can do. And that really starts now. And something you start in small ways and you just build over the years, right? You make your home a place where your children want to be. Right? You know, we're one of the things that's delighted me most over our years of raising kids is that our teenagers and our young adults want to bring their friends here. And that's really meaningful to me. And that's where I'd prefer them to be, right? I'd prefer them to be somewhere where I know where they are and have, you know, wonderful, wholesome fun here. You know, whether that's playing board games or hanging out by the fire or, you know, whatever. And as they've gotten older, you know, they'll, you know, my son, who's just, you know, in his first couple of college years under his belt, he, you know, will have a party and he'll have all his friends over. And often they'll just stay overnight because they can't, you know, if they have a drink or two, they can't drive. So I don't know how, the licensing, the way the license works here, if you have your first level of license, if you have any alcohol in your system, even one drink, even three sips of a drink, you can't drive, right? So, you know, we've just opened up, okay, you know what, you can sleep here because, we don't want anyone taking risks or losing their license or whatever. So provide an environment, you know, or hanging out with them. When we hung out a lot with our adult kids and, you know, let them ask the tough questions. And, you know, when they went through their difficult times, you know, it's sometimes hard to ride that, but we, you know, you have to just ride it out with them and have to know, like, okay, I've had difficult times. They're just going through a difficult time. And it's not about me. It's not about, you know, what I'm going through. You kind of have to give them a long leash. And I don't know if people may have noticed, especially if you have older kids, that I don't talk very much. I mean, I mentioned them in passing, but I don't really talk about my older kids at their stage of life that they're at right now. Because I feel like it's an invasion of their privacy to do so, right? And it's really important to me that I don't overstep my boundaries in terms of sharing with my kids. You know, but I will say this, most of them have gone through phases that, you know, as a mom, I'm thinking, you know, oh, you know, why are they going through this phase? Like, I don't like this, you know, person that they are right now. I don't like what they're doing, or, you know, I wish their faith was deeper or whatever. But overall, you know, I've got amazing kids and they've all come to amazing places. I think, you know, creating that family culture was really important part of that and where they're at, right? I think that, yeah, I would say that's the number one thing, you know, but also pray with them, pray for them. If they need to talk, just let them talk, you know, and sometimes that's at 1 a.m, you know, but as they get older, just the fact that your kids don't shut down conversations that are hard, right? The fact that your kids are coming to you is huge. And this is probably the thing I'm most grateful for in family life is that when my kids are going through difficult times, they've come to us instead of just keeping it all to themselves or hanging out with people that, you know, they feel they can talk to or whatever. That hasn't been, you know, and not that they don't have other people they talk to, of course they do, but they've come to us with their troubles, right?
That's beautiful. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because yesterday we were able to go to a morning mass, and we were able to meet two sisters of life. They come from a large family. And I asked one of them, I said, how do you get your children to, or what did your parents do to get you guys to become a religious, you know? And one of them said, was a lot of freedom. She said there was a lot of freedom. Yeah. There was not much imposing on us. So that was just great what you just said.
Thank you. Lovely to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because you got to wonder, years ago I was at a conference and I met a priest. He was a fraternity priest and he was just a young guy. He was probably 30, early 30s. And he had a brother who was also a priest. And he had a sister who was religious. And I said, you know, what did your parents do? Like, what did they, you know, I mean, this is amazing. And, you know, he had a similar answer. You know, we were modeled to, we were given a lot of freedom. And, you know, we were able to wrestle with the tough questions. And I thought, okay, I think we're doing something right. Being religious is not always the sign of holiness either. Of course, we have very holy mothers and fathers, but you do wonder that, I mean, it points you to something really obvious, right? So the sisters of life were sisters to each other as well?
Yes. So they have, two of them, and they're blood sisters. Yeah, and we know amazing. Their other blood sister who has 7 children, and she lives in the area. So
wow, they're that's a
lovely family.
Beautiful yeah. story. Yeah.
Does that sort of answer that question? Is there any more to that question that is unanswered?
No, that's great. There, you know, like I said, I always have a ton of questions and I'm kind of scrambly, you know. I think about one thing and then I move to another. But that was perfect, Bonnie. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. I'll
add something to this. This is something I wish I had done in terms of creating a family culture, and I did not do. Well, first of all, we recently, since COVID happened, we've been praying some of the Liturgy of the Hours, right? We do, you know, morning prayer, office of reading, night prayer, try to do evening prayer. It doesn't always happen. And I think that it's been such a beautiful form of prayer that I wish that it has been something that I had done years ago, right? I mean, something has been on my mind for a long time, but I wish I had maybe just done morning prayer and night prayer with my kids, you know. And we did have where we punctuated our day with prayer, but the universal prayer of the church, you know, the Mass and the Liturgy of the Hours would have been such an amazing thing. Even if you're doing a very abbreviated version of it, I think it would be such a beautiful thing to introduce to your children. The other thing that I wish I had done in terms of building family culture is celebrated my children's baptismal days and their name days, right? That I think would have been, you know, we occasionally did name days. You know, we always made sure that we, you know, said, oh, happy feast day or whatever. But I think it would have been beautiful to actually set those aside as, you know, we have a special dessert, or we have a, you know, and a prayer, and, you know, we acknowledge that sacrament or that connection to a saint more effectively. And 1 year ago, I had this mother had created like a sacramental plate, and she wrote on it all the dates of her children's sacraments. And every time there was a sacrament celebrated, they would serve their dessert or whatever on the plate. There would be so many things you could do potentially like that, or even a book where you always wrote it in a book and you always made sure you brought it out on the right day. You know, that's a really beautiful thing. We make a big deal of their birthdays. We should make a big deal of their sacraments as well, and their name days, their saint connections as well.
That's a beautiful idea. I think, you know, that's something I would love to implement. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's such a great idea.
Yeah, it's something I almost wonder if I should do with my grandkids, sort of start the ball rolling if their moms want them to, you know, and it would be kind of cool to do that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Did you have any other questions?
Did you ever go to like a daily mass with your little ones, or was that something you just weren't able to do, or sometimes again?
Yeah.
Great question. Yeah. Something I wish I had done more of. When I was first a convert, we lived rurally, and probably for the first, 7 or 8 years of my motherhood, I was just hanging on to kind of what Catholicism was, right? And I was so kind of overwhelmed by all the different devotions, and I would meet, you know, really faithful Catholics and, you know, hear about all the things they're doing. And I would actually just feel overwhelmed by it, you know, which led me to just, okay, we're just going to pray the rosary and that's it. I'm so overwhelmed by all of this stuff. But, you know, you slowly sort of adopt the lifestyle that is good for you, and you add to it a little at a time. It doesn't feel so overwhelming. So that we had many years where we would go to, you know, a daily mass during the week, right? Or sometimes two. And I think that what I found is that a couple of things. First of all, we lived rurally, so we didn't ever have mass every day. So we might have, you know, a couple of masses a week or 3 masses a week. And my kids, so we would try to make it to one and, you know, sometimes two. What I found was the effect of going to a daily mass with little kids, even once or twice a week, because there's less people there and mass is shorter and they can kind of be more attentive. They kind of learned more about Sunday mass from going to weekday masses. They kind of got more dialed into what was actually happening, and we had more opportunity to kind of talk about it. And so that was a real advantage to taking them to mass. As we've gotten older and, you know, my youngest daughter, you know, really wants to go to Mass as often as possible. And so that's, you know, now that we're kind of late to the party, and because COVID hit us sort of 6 months after it hit the States, we're, you know, we're just starting to see the lifting of mandates and things like that now. So, you know, Masses are more available to us and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, again, I would say, you know, that the value of trying to get to one or two Masses a week is just fantastic. And the payback, in a sense, from doing that was profound, right? And something that I wish that, again, that I had been more tuned into and started earlier, because I think that the benefits are wonderful. You know, I remember years ago going to a priest, and I went to a Mass at this, you know, weekday Mass by myself without my kids. And I was talking to this priest. I went to him for confession, and I was sort of explaining my overwhelmedness, you know, about how I was feeling and how I was feeling like all these people that I know have are doing all these wonderful things, and I'm just so lame and all of that. And he said, "How many children do you have?" Because I had a baby with me. And I said, 4. And he said, "You know, sweetie, you're doing God's work. You know, you're doing God's work, right?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You know, daily Mass is a beautiful and wonderful thing, but know that you're doing God's work, and know that, you know, you're fulfilling your Sunday Mass, and the rest of it will fall into place. You know, there will be a season for this." And I thought, I was so relieved. You know, and as you know, like, your oldest is how old now?
So my oldest, he's 7. He'll be 8 in August. And he has autism. He's our artistic little boy.
Okay.
And yeah, but he's doing great. He's not fully verbal, but he's come a long way. Speaking of Mass.
Amazing.
Yeah, our priest, he's so sweet. Yesterday he mentioned to us, he says, "You know, I see a lot of improvement in him, because he's just already a wiggly kid. And so even getting him up to go to communion and cross his little arms and get a blessing, he's been through going to daily Mass and Sunday Mass, you know, he's been able to learn that." And I just think, wow, like, the possibilities are endless, you know?
Yeah. With these kids. And, you know, you must notice, like, the difference, like, say from 2 years ago, that your life probably, even though you've had more children, life actually gets easier, right?
Yes,
the more,
it,
you know,
does.
With every passing year, even if you have more children, because you have more older kids and more people who don't need your help, right?
Right, yeah. Like our 6-year-old, she's pretty self-sufficient. Even our little 3-year-old is getting there. This little guy, he's the hardest one I've had.
I know. Well, I always think, you know, when people are worried about homeschooling, I think, you know, you raise them to age 5. That was the hardest part.
Exactly.
And you survived that. So, you know, everything else, you know, you can handle this. Yes. You can totally handle this. So are you taking your kids to daily Mass?
We do right now with this little Dominic guy. He has really worn me out, so I haven't been regularly, but I did before he was born. I was
awesome.
I was able to, and with the 3 older ones, but yeah, this guy has just really worn me out.
Yeah, and we have to kind of sometimes respect those seasons.
Yes, absolutely. I remember you mentioning that you would sleep as long as you could sometimes when you had little ones in the morning.
Yeah.
And I always remember that. I'm like, I need to sleep a little bit longer today. Bonnie Landry says it's okay.
She gave me permission.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I have to tell you a funny story.
Years ago, I had a mom who I've done workshops for years and years. And then maybe, I don't know, after I'd done workshops for a number of years, about probably 7 or 8 years ago, I had a bunch of moms over at my house. And one of the moms, who's about my age, and her kids were kind of about my kids' ages, and she said, you know, she was telling another mother, she goes, "You know, the greatest thing that Bonnie ever said to me is that I don't have to teach my children writing." And I was just aghast at hearing this, because I thought, I've never said anything like that. What I have said is, I don't think you have to teach creative writing. I do think kids need to learn how to write a paragraph and an essay and all that. But she said, but you know what? For whatever reason, she took in what she needed, and that gave her the freedom to homeschool however she needed to. But Bonnie said, "I don't need to teach my children writing." I was like, oh no. How else have I been misquoted over the years?
I know, right? But it's worked, so that's awesome. That's lovely.
Yeah. So any other burning questions on your mind?
Not at the moment. You know, again, I don't hesitate to text you.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's fabulous. That's wonderful. I do, when you told me what your name was, because you're on your Instagram, it's just like your initials or something, or yours and your husband's initials. And so when I actually found out what your name was, I had just given you, when I was praying for you about your last pregnancy, I had just given you a name because I think it was Christina or something, because I just thought, well, I don't know your first name, so I'll just apply a name to you, which I did. But when I found out your name was Bianca, we used to have a hedgehog named Bianca. So it's a special name in our family.
That's hilarious. That's awesome. My nephews love, what is it, Sonic the Hedgehog?
Right, yeah, okay. Bianca's a better name,
that's
I think.
That's funny. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's been so lovely to talk to you. Just hang on. Once we wrap up, just hang on and I'll end the recording and then I'll chat with you for another minute or so.
Awesome, thank you.
So thank you so much for joining me. This has been lovely.
No, thank you. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Yeah, you did a lot of bouncing. You handled this really well.
Yes.
God bless. Have a great day.
You too.